We live on a planet that's about 4.5 billion years old, almost 12,700 kilometers in diameter, and composed of a little less than 6 septillion kilograms of iron, oxygen, silicon, magnesium, and a few other materials, orbiting 93 million miles around a pretty normal star. We can observe this and measure it. There are about 200 billion other stars in our galaxy which formed out of pressure applied to interstellar gas and dust. Our planet formed from a collection of dust and gases thrown off by the birth of a sun a few billion years ago. We know this because we can see it happening elsewhere. Life formed on this planet about 2 billion years ago when amino acid molecules were nudged by radiation into a form that enables them to reproduce. We still don't know exactly how this occurred, but the evidence points in this direction. Some molecules were better reproducers than others. The best reproducers do it more and thus take over. Complexity arises when the best reproducers compete for resources and one is successful and the other isn't. It is a process that has been going on since the beginning of life and will continue as long as life exists. It is vast and humbling to consider. The evidence for this is overwhelming. And welcome to the Hellbound Alley program. I am Allie.
And I'm Frank.
And I'm reading from someone's live journal.
Cargo Weasel's live journal made a post that just telling people that he was fed up with religion and pseudoscience.
Do you want me to continue?
Age beliefs. Sure, go ahead.
Because this is good. In about 2 billion years, another galaxy called Andromeda is going to crash into our galaxy and ignite waves of supernovae and new star generation before both supermassive black holes at the centers of both galaxies combine millions of years after that, inundating the new massive elliptical galaxy with gamma rays. As big and inevitable as this event is, it's a fairly minor occurrence in the local group, which is a small part of the Virgo supercluster, which is part of the Great Wall, which is the largest currently observable structure in the universe, at least 500 by 300 million light years in area, but only 15 million light years thick.
Only?
The universe is comprised of many of these walls in a rough structure determined, we suspect, by the gravitational pull of dark matter. These structures do not require faith to exist, they are there for observation. And we don't understand everything about them, nor will we, most likely, as long as there is a species called humans. But we can ask, and we can pursue, and we can explore, and we can think, and we can search. And if we do it right, we'll get answers, and they won't be the ones we expect. But we have to ask, and we have to search and explore, and not hide behind stories we were told as children. If that's not impressive enough, or miraculous enough to, or astonishing enough for you, I don't know what the hell to tell you. The universe is out there, and it's real. It's bigger and more amazing than anything you can imagine. It is far more magnificent and awe-inspiring than any myth that humans invent around the campfire. It is not a spook, or an aura, or a mystical story that feels good. It is reality. People who bury themselves in spooks and stories are refusing to look. They are willfully ignorant, and nothing is sadder to me than willful ignorance.
Wow.
That's really
Amen.
Great. And actually, we should contact this person so he can he might appreciate that. But no, I really
Great.
Appreciate it. I really appreciate
yeah.
what he wrote. It's fabulous. There's more, but...
Great entry.
We could just
Great
do the whole entry. Hour reading.
No, no, actually, that's the end. That's
oh, it
the
is?
End of it. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of comments, though.
I'll bet.
But I thought that was such a great article there. That
oh, I agree 100%. The whole, especially the final idea that everything... is massively awe-inspiring. What more do you want?
Well, I don't like the word awe.
Well, okay, awe in its...
Wonder?
Awe means fear. But there's there could be a reason to have awe in that, yeah, we're so insignificant that, you know, eventually we're going to blow up or that the Earth is going to die of radiation or whatever. But, I mean, it is inspiring. I mean, there's so much going on, and because that's all there is. How could you possibly want more than all there is? It's like a person who has all the money in the world and they cry because there isn't any more.
Well, you know, though, our imagination is part of all there is. Which
Definitely.
Is great, but the problem is when people start to confuse their imagination with reality. You know?
Well, no, people who do that think that they're really powerful because they think that their wants and their desires somehow control what's going on around them, somehow control reality.
I've always said that belief is fundamentally an ego. Is basically based on the ego, because this idea that somehow your mind, your experience, your feelings can override the laws of nature.
Right.
You know? It's like, I believe, therefore it's true.
And also because you don't want to die forever, you want to go on forever, then, you know, that your existence, your personality is so important to this vast universe that it must go on forever. I mean, one person's, you know, little experience is like, even, you know, Mozart or some king or some pope, it's, you know, they're all the same if you look at it the way this person wrote their article.
All the same. I don't know about that. I mean, we're all humans.
Cosmically.
Of course, from
cosmically, it's like they don't exist.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, even from our perspective, I guess you could say that it's a good thing to see it more of this way, because people think we're so different when, in fact, we share human nature, which is far more reaching than most people think.
Well, the spirituality...
Of course, a lot of people don't believe in evolution anyway, so...
The spirituality of it is not in thinking that we're insignificant and we're just going to die anyway. That's not the point. It's not the point. It's in reconciling your life with that, and you can. There are whole religions associated with that.
I mean, the problem with what you say is insignificant for who? I mean, human beings,
exactly.
We're interdependent, you know? We have to live.
Well,
what
I was trying to say is not that we are in what I'm trying to say is not that
we're
insignificant.
It's just from a cosmic perspective.
What I'm saying is that people think, well, you're an atheist, therefore, you must think we're insignificant. That makes you automatically a nihilist.
Right.
No.
Which is not true. It's just a fact, you know?
Because the reality also is that we don't have that so much of a direct experience with the cosmos on a whole. We have to deal with each other in a more local fashion.
You still have to live, you know? And if you look at this from a values perspective, see, this is another thing. They think that if we're not religious, there's no reason to live with each other. But that's that's bullshit.
Somehow they had to make up
religion. We don't have any choice. We don't have any choice to live with each other. Because that's how we accomplish our values.
We don't have any choice to live.
We accomplish our values. No, but I mean, we accomplish our values by cooperation. You know, for example, love. How can you love anyone if you don't value other people?
Well, I think this...
And Christians are like, well, you need religion. Well, no, we all have personal values.
I think, though,
we all want to have relationships.
Right. In this whole perspective, knowing what part of the universe we are, basically, is that us being alive and having lives that seem, you know, this big to us is kind of... It kind of makes it precious all at the same time. I mean, it kind of makes us sort of fragile. Like, you know, what are the odds that we exist, you know? I mean, you are yours to protect out of the universe. It's like the one thing you have in the entire universe, and so
well,
do
you
something
don't really,
with it.
But you're born with the illusion that you do, and that's a good thing. Because if you weren't, you wouldn't have the impulse to survive.
Exactly.
Of course, you have a sense of self. You don't actually have a self, but you have a sense of self. And there's a reason for that.
That's interesting, you know.
There's a reason why you have a body image and a sense of self in your brain, you know. It didn't arrive there randomly or because
of God. I know, it's not an accident.
So,
that's
anyway.
Interesting because I was having a conversation. Well, I wasn't having a conversation. I was responding.
You are right now.
I was responding to a person on a blog. Oh my gosh. They wrote this great post about belief in God and how
we're gonna have to go though.
Well, I know, but there was a person. He was basically saying it's like saying I don't believe in Santa Claus, but if you offered me some evidence, I would consider it. Which is, you know, nobody really says that. And
right.
He was kind of saying that's sort of a weak position.
And then someone came and said that he did believe in Santa Claus, which I thought was a joke, but apparently it's not.
No, what he said was, I've seen Santa Claus, because he is the spirit of giving.
Well, it's the same thing that people say about God.
Which is really dumb, and let me tell you why, because
have you not read
the Yes, Virginia, There is a Santa Claus little poem about how he exists in all of our spirit of giving?
Okay,
and to be brief, I just wanted to say
that
then you must also believe in the spirit of evil.
Right, Satan, for example.
And, you know, personifying a spirit of giving and a spirit of evil is cruel, really. Because
what about free will?
The little Virginia who doesn't get Christmas this year because her house was destroyed by a hurricane? Did the spirit of giving decide something about her that she was not worthy?
I have a question. Doesn't that deny free will? Does that deny my expression of value?
Well, that's another thing I answered. I said, if you say it's the spirit of giving, you take away any responsibility or any credit anyone gets for knowing that they should do good.
I guess we better forget about free will.
There's no moral autonomy whatsoever.
There you go.
If there's a spirit of giving. Is there a spirit of giving inside of us that makes us do things? Or, I mean, if he's talking about a little metaphor, then what does it mean?
It's
what
just
is
a
it?
Metaphor.
It means nothing.
All right, we have to go to the blog spot. We'll be right back.
And now, the blog spot. Join the godless revolution at Brent Rasmussen's Unscrewing the Inscrutable. Get your own blog space on UTI just for signing up as a member, and it's free. The best blog posts get promoted to the front page. Simply point your browser to BrentRasmussen.com. That's BrentRasmussen.com. Bookmark us today. Brent Rasmussen's Unscrewing the Inscrutable. We're not angry. We just don't agree with you.
Free Thought Weekly offers discussions based on a rationalist approach to life, with an emphasis on how activism by freethinkers can make a positive impact on the world. That's freethoughtweekly.blogspot.com.
So, do you like our blog spot? We just started doing this. And if you're interested in having an ad for your blog, go ahead and email me at allie@hellboundallie.com. That's ALLEEE. We exchange this for putting our banner up on your blog.
Or a review.
And you can also check out our website.
Don't have to put our banner.
Yeah,
you
review.
Just have a review.
Our website is hellboundallie.com. And
there's a lot of stuff on there.
You can also go ahead and check out hellboundallie.com/live for information about our live show, which is now playing, will be playing on Shoutcast.
Yes, and the sound is much better.
The sound is, not only the sound is twice as good, but You don't have to go through a listening wizard, and you don't have to register.
Yeah.
So that should be pretty good.
This show is available on Free Thought Radio every Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 7 p.m. and every evening on the Hell by Alley station, from 7 to midnight. We have all the shows running there. And, of course, the live show on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Check it out.
Yeah.
Shoutcast, phone calls, you can call in, you can win prizes.
That's
right. It's
like
a cornucopia of goodness.
Check out the prizes. You can go to my blog at hellboundalley.blogspot.com, and you can see what you can win if you tune into our show, if you hear this before our show airs.
And our topic will be the hurricane.
Yeah.
But not exactly from the news perspective.
I also wanted to mention that I spent... went late into the night working on Normal Bob Smith's show. I don't know when he's going to put the link up, but you should check him out at normalbobsmith.com.
Oh.
He's one of our friends, and he's got that great website, and because he was on our show, he decided he wanted to do a show too, so we'll see what happens with his link.
Alright. What is the fine-tuning argument?
I don't know what the fine-tuning argument is. Something like, because the universe is ordered or something? That the existence of God doesn't contradict...
No.
See, I have no idea.
It's basically the idea that the universe is fine-tuned, hence the term. It's that somehow the universe is so finely tuned...
right.
...that... There must be a God. There must be a tuner.
Because the universe is just going so well, isn't it? After what we read in the beginning of the show, I wonder.
The first thing, well, there are many ways of approaching it. One thing is life. Or you can say that the existence of life, the origin of life, depends on a number of parameters. And for some reason, by some calculation, they don't say what, but Christians say that, you know, it's much more probable that a universe would be life prohibiting than life permitting. I don't know where they get that. But there's this notion that life is an extraordinary event in the probabilistic sense. And...
Well, we don't really know how improbable it is, well, because we don't know if there's any more life.
Well, that's one of the points, is it? I don't think it's highly improbable, and we'll mention that.
Well, because it exists, then the probability is one, right?
We'll mention that with the monkey god. But... Yeah, but I guess we're talking about here about a priori of probabilities. But either way, you're still right, of course. The second way by which they discuss that is the constants of natural law. There are approximately 20 constants, such as the speed of light, the charge of the electron, etc., etc., that together dictate the kind of universe, a certain kind of universe. They are, of course, interrelated, as natural law is interrelated. And they say, well, if any of these constants were slightly different, then we would end up with a universe that would not permit life, or would not have this or that... etc., would not have planets, and so on and so forth. Therefore, there must be an extremely fine tuning there in terms of what these constants are. Of course, one part they don't understand is that they're related. You can't really
Isn't
just change
like
one.
Isn't this like the whole why something and not nothing thing?
No. This is about the specific nature of physical constants and organization in the universe.
Okay.
for example, you know, they'll say, for example, if the Earth was a little farther away or a little closer, there wouldn't have been any life. If the charge of the electron was this or that, changed it a little slightly, we couldn't have bodies or et cetera.
Well, the Earth wouldn't be the Earth.
And so on and so
but
forth.
But doesn't the Earth have to be where it is because of the size it is right now? And I mean, how could it not be where it is? It wouldn't be Earth.
Well, of course, that's one thing. If you have a different configuration, you will have different kinds of organization. That's one problem with the argument. But the reason why this argument from fine-tuning has become so popular is because it has the veneer of science. It appears to rely
on
scientific
terms. It's got that science-y language.
Right, exactly. It uses the language of physics and the language of biology and the language of astrophysics and so on and so forth. But now you look at this, and the first problem with it is that you look at this and there's an inherent contradiction in the argument. Because what it does basically is say, look at what science has found out. Because first of all, you wouldn't know about the constants if you didn't have science. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing, look at what science has found out. There are these constants, okay, and look at how they're finely tuned. Therefore, there must be a God.
Well, that's really
circular
weird.
Circular problem.
Yeah.
You need science to make the basis of your argument against science.
How can you
that
use...
That doesn't quite work now,
does
it?
How can you use natural law to explain something supernatural?
Exactly. Now, there's a problem, because you're refuting yourself. You're trying to use materialist science to affirm the existence of supernatural God, denies
those,
the efficacy of natural science.
Those constants can't have a God in them.
Yeah, exactly. If God exists, there's no such thing as a constant.
It can't
be. In the first
be.
Place.
Because so, there wouldn't have been a constant when God created the universe. If you're talking about God as the creator that made a beginning, then those constants couldn't have existed. They can't be constants anymore. Right?
The second thing is, they also say, as part of this, they also say, we don't know where these constants come from.
Come from?
We don't know where these facts come from.
Come from?
Therefore, it must come from God.
But wait, how can they come from anything?
Well, you can
if they're
give
constants.
A descriptive explanation. For example, you know, the speed of light is such because of the nature of the photon, the charge of this or that.
Because of the causal universe. Causal.
You can give a descriptive explanation,
meaning,
you know, going down a level of explanation.
But how can the speed of light come
from...
But
if you're talking about a temporal explanation, it's the Big Bang.
Right, right.
Now,
right,
if you want an explanation of that, well, now we have a problem. Because as far as we know, there isn't any.
There isn't any explanation of the Big Bang?
No. Well, there's an explanation of the whole sequence of events.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for something beyond that, then we have a problem, because that's a religious question, not a scientific question. We can't ask that any more than a Christian, you know, would answer the question, why did God exist?
Right, they get insulted if you ask that.
Of course.
That.
It's just as insulting.
And so what they see is the atheist being insulted if you ask where the Big Bang comes
from. So what tuned it all? And this reminds me, there's another problem, because the Big Bang singularity is fundamentally unpredictable. There's a pattern of probabilities for the Big Bang singularity, but it's not 100% predictable, which is another argument against God. Because if God created the universe, then it would be 100% predictable. But, in fact, the universe is not 100% predictable.
Right.
Because if God did something, then it would be 100% a priori.
Well, how could it be, though? Because everything's contingent, though.
On God.
Yeah. So
yeah, but God's will is 100% know, which, if God wants something, there's no probability that it doesn't happen.
Which is a Borg.
A priori.
Which sounds like a Borg god to me.
But a priori, there is a probability of the universe being another way. So, that's another argument. Now, another major problem with fine-tuning is that it is an argument against the notion of a creator, not for. Now think about this. You have a system, very complex system, and it's designed in such a way that if anything changes, it stops working. Now imagine if you built a computer like that. If anything in the computer changes a tiny little bit, the temperature, whatever, it stops working.
Well, let's see. What would a Christian say that if you gave the computer free will, then...
No, but we're talking about physical law.
Right, right. You can't change physical law with free will.
Now, what does that tell you? Does that tell you that it was designed? No. A designer, if he's a modicum of intelligence, will design something to have some tolerance. We don't design computers to work at 36.5 Celsius. We design them to work at a large range of temperatures.
Yeah, you have to build a house with a little space for the wood to expand and contract.
Now, what does that mean if the universe is fine-tuned? It means there's no designer. Or if there is a designer, he's an idiot. Because that's not good design. It's just not good design. So
does that, the fine-tuning argument assumes that it's all designed perfectly?
Right.
Because obviously we can see complete, you know, evidence of bad design, like we talked about a couple weeks ago with Ed Babinski's huge, gigantic, humongous list of bad design
in
arguments.
Absolutely. But we're not really talking about bad design, but that's kind of the same thing, though. For example, if our breathing was dependent on, say, having exactly, 25.6% of oxygen in the air, you know,
uh-huh.
And any other level would suffocate us, well, that would
right.
be fine-tuning. Right? Because it relies on a very specific
condition. But we can actually go up really high and survive in thin air, and people adapt to it all the time. They adapt, like the Sherpas in Tibet or whatever, they adapt to thinner air. And
that's because the human body...
Wouldn't they call that fine-tuning? That
well, the human body is not designed, but is certainly modeled.
Right.
To be adapted to all kinds of environments, you know, contrarily to the universe.
And all animals, well, lots of animals can adapt to different surroundings and circumstances.
So thanks to evolution, we're not fine-tuned, we're adaptable. But if...
Right, because they say that we're all created exactly how we are now, 10,000 years ago.
Of course.
It's like, so God made the people who live in Tibet 6,000 years ago?
Right.
Apparently not. He made Adam and Eve who stay healthy on a certain kind of air and a certain kind of diet.
Mm-hmm.
That they get from, uh-oh.
Sorry.
Do you need some water? Anyway. Moving along.
Well, we have to go to the intermission.
Oh, yeah. Well, my intermission, I don't know if it's totally on topic. I kind of thought it was, but Ken Ham says that we need to observe the animals and nature to learn about the universe. But, unlike what atheists and evolutionists do, we have to use God's Word, the Bible, as a special lens to look through to see what nature does. So apparently we can't look at animals and nature clearly to see what's really happening. We have to to befuddle our vision and our thinking through this these rose-colored glasses. It's hilarious.
Wow. We'll be right back.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls. Take a deep breath. Relax.
Nature, what does it really teach us?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the book on effective witnessing, Why Won't They Listen? Well, Ken, many scientists tell us that when they look at nature, they see evolution. When Christians look at nature, what should they see?
Well, it's rare nowadays when you watch a nature show on television when you don't get at least one reference, sometimes many, to evolution. You often see a propaganda piece that declares that there's a world of death and struggle that's been evolving for millions of years. You know, in the book of Job, we're told to let the beasts, the fish, the fowl of the air, and the earth teach us. They declare to us that God made everything, and that the soul of every living thing and the breath of all mankind is in His hands. But like evolutionists, we'd come to the wrong conclusions about God if we just looked at nature. We have to use God's word as a lens to understand what we see. You see, nature is full of death, bloodshed, disease, and suffering. But when we put on our biblical glasses using the lens of the Bible, we can see the handiwork of the Creator, but we can also see and understand the effects of the judgment because of our sin. Only the Bible explains this world of beauty and also the ugliness.
One of the most asked questions we receive is, if there's a God of love, why is there so much disease, suffering, and death in this world? Discover more when you read Ken Ham's free booklet on death and suffering. Next time you're in front of your computer, visit AnswersRadio.com.
Okay, intermission's over. The show must go on.
Oh, that was...
Yeah, I'm just waiting for his New Orleans anti-gay thing. I'm sure that's coming out quick. Because we know what caused the hurricane. It was...
Gays?
The gays.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's continue on our magic carpet ride.
To okay.
Flavor.
To flavor? You sound like a cigarette ad.
Come on our magic carpet ride to flavor.
Camel cigarettes.
No.
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm talking, in fact, about the fine-tuning argument. And our third objection is basically, you know about the anthropic principle?
I do not. You're Mr. Apologetics.
Oh, will you?
Oh, will I?
You're Mrs. Apologetics. The,
God, I don't know if I like that last name. I didn't even take your last name.
Anthropic principle is, basically, we shouldn't be surprised that how well we fit in with our environment, because we evolved within that environment. It's, kind of like a puddle, it's kind of like a frog in a puddle being really astonished that his puddle fits perfectly in with the hole in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how does it do that?
Does that puddle fit with the hole in the ground?
Exactly. Exactly.
That's beautiful.
Why should we be surprised to be here? If we weren't, if our planet was not adapted for life, then we wouldn't be here. Indeed, there would be life elsewhere. As you said...
Or we wouldn't be
changing...
We.
Right. Of course not. But changing things in the universe does not... how should I say? It's based on a somewhat unspoken assumption that our universe is the default, and that if something doesn't happen, if something is changed, then it's not going to exist in a different way. You know, that our universe is the only way that things can be done.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, that's not true. In fact, there are many ways for the universe and planets and life to exist. In fact, there's a program that you can find on the internet called Monkey God by Stenger. You know, the physicist atheist guy?
Okay.
You know, Victor Stenger.
Yeah.
Anyway, he made a little program called Monkey God, which you can use on the internet if you go on his website. And the conclusion you get, of course, although he doesn't use 20 constants, he uses, I think, 6. I have to check. 4. He only uses 4. But it still generates some results, concrete results. For example, the lifespan of stars, etc. And what it gives us is that even though many universes formed by different constants would be weird, they would be completely unrecognizable to us, they would still have stars, planets, and life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically the point of that, because like I said, the constants and physical laws in general are interrelated. You can't just change one. It's like there's this idea you can just change a law of nature and that's it. But laws of nature are conceptualized by our brain, but in nature, in reality, they're not separate. They're part of a causal whole. It's like you say, well, we can transmit thoughts with our brain, you know. And that has no other repercussions on reality, you know. A universe where things like that could happen would be radically different from our own.
It's funny, they talk about that in the science of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
They talked about how the Harry Potter books don't truly break... Well, they do break the laws of physics, but they... try to realistically not break as many laws right. as they can. Like, you can't make something out of thin air. Just like in Star Trek with the replicator. It's a replicator. It doesn't actually make things appear
uh-huh.
out of nothing, like Christians think happens. They actually form things out of other things, like Star Trek, the molecules in the air and such, rearranging them. It happens also in Bewitched. They explain something that you can't just make money that comes from nowhere. It actually, when you make money, it comes from somebody's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So the witches have to follow certain rules about that. Otherwise, you know, the wizarding world in Harry Potter would be a bunch of thieves. Of course, they all have their own money.
Right.
But even Samantha Stevens has to follow certain rules, which is pretty clever, so people should probably watch Bewitched. Not the damn movie.
Now, see, here's an example. Suppose that you're scheduled to be shot by a firing squad. And, okay.
I'm scheduled to be shot by a firing
squad. And then
squad.
You go out there and you put the blindfold or whatever, and then you hear a fire. And then every single shot misses. And
wow.
5 seconds later, you're like, I'm still alive. So now, what should you be surprised about? You see, that's the point of the entropic principle, is that you shouldn't be surprised about being alive.
Right.
Because if you weren't, you wouldn't be thinking
that right
now.
You wouldn't be surprised.
That's the thing, though, but in our language we would say, I'm surprised that I'm still alive. But you shouldn't. That's not what you're really surprised about.
Yeah.
What you're really surprised about is the causal fact that all of the shots missed. The causal link ended up being not in you. Ended up being, you know, going around you. You're not surprised that you're alive, and you're not surprised that you're not dead. These are not surprising. This is not information or surprising fact. They're really surprising facts.
Because there's no such choice as to be dead.
Right, exactly. It's the underlying causal links that are surprising, not the fact in itself. And in the case of the universe... there is no surprise at all. Because the causal links are scientifically understandable. And to a certain extent, they are understood. At least we have a good idea of what they are, and they're not inherently surprising. They're just part of the laws of nature. So, therefore, the whole argument fails, really. Okay. And another problem is that they assume that the laws, natural law and physical constants can be changed. Now, of course, if you're a theist, you would think that, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Because you believe in God, you believe in the cartoon
universe.
You
believe in prayer.
Yeah.
That you could actually change God's mind.
Yes.
Or change a snake into a staff or something. Or water into wine.
Now, certainly I can conceive of such a change. I can imagine it. But, unfortunately, I know many philosophers seem to think that conceivable means that somehow it's possible, but that doesn't make it possible. Just because I can conceive it doesn't make it possible.
I can imagine myself flying through the air.
I don't care how many philosophers tell me this, but we can conceive something does not make it possible. Okay? We don't know if...
Because we can conceive of an invisible pink unicorn.
Yeah.
But there's no such way for anything invisible to be pink.
Actually,
or for anything to be invisible, for that matter.
Yes, yes. A priori, there was a possibility for the constant to be otherwise. But not in the way that they go, like, if the constant were changed. I don't really know how to explain this. But anyway, the scientific facts are more subtle than their explanation. And like I said, the constants are not isolated. You know, then you can't just change one without changing others. And that's our next point. You know, for example, if C is not invariant... For example, when you get young Earth creationists who say that C is going lower and lower, you know, they say, at first C was almost infinite because God had just created the universe with the appearance of age, and then C got lower and lower and lower until the value it is now. But if that is true, then that means that the theory of relativity is false now, does it? If C is non-invariant, then there's no relativity.
Right.
And that means there are absolute frames of reference. And now we have a problem, because that's not our universe.
Mm-hmm.
So, whoops. So there you go. You know, we now live in a very different universe. You know? Where there are absolute frames of reference. I'm sure many crackpots would like that. They like to think that the universe is really simple and there's one absolute frame of reference. That's it.
It's called...
Everything is particular. This is the crackpot universe.
It's called
the
kook motif.
It's like the crackpot universe is everything is as it looks. Everything is really simple. Everything is particle. There's one frame of reference, ours. It's absolute. Time is the invariant, you know? And C is variable. If you drive at 20 kilometers per hour and you have your lights on, the light is going at C plus 20 kilometers an hour. Because I said so, damn it. I don't need your fuddly duddly experiments.
It's time to change the SAT questions immediately, or the answers, I mean.
I want to hear your damn scientific facts.
You want to see some of these, folks? You should go to our other website. In solidology.com.
Yes.
Our whole website is based on crackpots that think this way.
We love them.
In fact, when we got together, that was our first website, and it's got a lot of stuff in it, even though it doesn't update all that much. It's still quite...
We love them.
Quite a lot of interesting crackpot theories to go through.
They are our children.
Gene Ray.
They are our children. We just We just love
them. We... Well, who's the big physicist one? Like, you talk about Hammond a lot.
Hammond, yes.
George Hammond page, which you made a few months ago. So that one you gotta check out, because his universe has a god in it, and his god is scientifically proven.
Oh yes, a scientific fact, absolutely.
Hammond is a notorious Usenet crank.
Yes.
But then again, so is Francois. So
am I.
Because, you know, the Usenet community should
I'm
know.
I'm a crank. Also go on...
Because of what you're saying right now, you're a crank.
Also go on oddbooks.com. I love
that
site.
Donna Coffey.
I love it. No, it's not.
Oh, it's
but
not?
But it's absolutely delicious.
Well, Donna Coffey's site is great, too, but she writes books about crackpots.
It's really fun. If you don't like weird stuff, well, you might. I mean, check it out. It's really fun. Our next objection is that divine creation is not scientific. Well, I guess we've covered that a bit with the circular argument. But specifically, we're talking about the idea of basing, you know, divine creation. More, I guess the problem is really getting to the conclusion of divine creation. Because divine creation... Is not a hypothesis. It's not a hypothesis because, you know, first of all, you can't prove that a god is involved. The conclusion of fine-tuning is just that there is something that designed it. That doesn't have to be a god.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, we have a big problem of specificity. We have a problem in terms of working. How does it work? We don't know. You can't know. That's part of the point, isn't it? And it's contradicted by the facts, like I said before. By the way, the model that I was thinking about earlier was the Hardo-Hawking model.
Okay.
So if you want to check that out, I guess it's debatable, though. I mean, it's supported by scientific evidence, but... It doesn't convince everyone. But anyway, I'm just throwing it out there. let's see. What else do we have? Oh yes, of course, fine-tuning argument itself lacks specificity. So, if you say, well, there are these laws, you know, and somehow they are tuned for something, life. Well, why do we need a god to explain that?
Wait, tuned for something, it's kind of like divine plan? Is that like saying that evolution
has an
aim or something?
Well, how about a process of evolution? There you go. How about a process of cosmological evolution? We actually understand what evolution is and how it works. We could very well have that kind of process cosmologically if you accept the premises. Like I'm saying, this only applies if you accept the argument. But even if you accept the argument, we don't need a god at all to explain that feature.
And the fact that you don't need such a complex supernatural entity disproves it using the razor.
Right. Could just as easily say that there's some kind of evolutionary process going on and give some material possibilities, you know, have some kind of heredity taking place at a cosmic scale. I don't know how that would work, but I'm sure some science fiction author could figure this out. Right?
Maybe in such a universe you can inherit curses.
And finally, an objection that Richard Carrier has made, which I wanted to mention also, is that she says that the existence of life does not really demand explanation per se. He says that if we see life as being a temporal consequence of the universe as a whole, then the existence of life requires no more explanation than the pattern of raindrops falling on the sidewalk.
I'm just trying to understand it.
Well, if life is just a byproduct of the certain states of the universe,
okay.
If you see it more as, how could I say, you know, just a temporal consequence that, a temporal consequence of the existence of the universe, of states of the universe, then it doesn't really require explanation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is, well, the thing is, in his argument, the fine-tuning argument is inherently circular, because it assumes purpose, design, in regards to life as a premise in order to prove that there is design. You see?
Yeah.
So there is a kind of circularity here. There's no reason for us to assume design or purpose, or to assume that life has some kind of special ontological status. Well, it's just life, you know?
Yeah.
And, of course, we have reasons to believe that there's life elsewhere in the universe. That there's, in fact, plenty of it. The conditions for life don't seem to be extraordinary.
Mathematically.
Yes.
The chance, you know, if it's not that life comes by chance, but the chances are good.
Well, it's not really a chance. But it's more of a proportion.
Right.
I mean, given the millions and millions and billions of planets, more appropriately billions, and the fact that some of them will be Earth-like, well, there's a pretty good chance that there's plenty of life elsewhere.
And if you watch Cosmos, they don't all have to be Earth-like to have life.
No, no, that's true.
A life based not on carbon, but on hydrogen.
No, silicon.
He talked about the Jupiter beings that are like big closed off bubbles that hover around in the atmosphere.
Right.
You gotta see that series to see what he means by that. It's not life as we know it, but it's still alive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there's a new craze on the internet right now.
It took off.
Really
a lot
fast.
Better than I'd ever hoped for.
It went to
for.
The news really fast, too.
Oh, yeah, it's all over all the news.
Why don't you go ahead and explain what the flying spaghetti monsterism really
is. He's my new god. The flying spaghetti monster, according to Wikipedia, flying spaghetti monsterism is a parody religion created to protest the decision by the Kansas State Board of Education to allow intelligent design to be taught in science classes alongside evolution.
So what it is basically is an intelligent designer, because
they want to edge their religion in.
Because ID people refuse to talk about God, right?
All they talk about is equal time. Well, what is it that they want to give equal time to, Mr. George Bush, who also thought, well, you know, this is America, the concept of equal time is so important, but they don't realize that in reality there's no such thing as equal time. It is or it isn't. In science, we don't have equal time.
Right.
And teaching is not a democracy.
Exactly.
You don't let the kids decide for themselves. That's not what education is.
In some educational system,
well, it depends on
children choose their activities, but they still
don't choose what reality is.
Right. They still don't get to choose what they learn. It's just facts.
Gee, let the 13-year-olds decide what science is. Let's do this in all
schools. I wasn't equipped by my school to judge that anyway.
Of course
they don't
not.
Give us the tools to evaluate, and then they say evaluate.
And I'm supposed.
That's bullshit.
I'm assuming in
wow.
the Kansas in Kansas public schools they sure don't. I mean, they might do it in Amish schools, you know, because it goes up to eighth grade.
And can you imagine in the U.S.? It must be even worse, because American students are stupid.
Well, that's what it is in the U.S. They're not talking about Canada.
And they're
here.
Inculcated all kinds of nonsense, like patriotism and great America is.
This whole concept of equal time being taken by the right-wing conservatives and turned into this monster. Well, maybe the monster is the flying spaghetti monster.
But
you
he's
know,
kind of cute.
Because if you want to do equal time, let's take equal time to all the classes. Let's take equal time to civics and make sure that Nazism and fascism is given equal time in ethics class. Let's make sure, you know, in religion class, that atheism is given equal time with all the other religions.
Yeah.
Or I'm going, you know, Satanism, or I'm going to complain because that's all I know how to do because I'm some stupid hick from Buttville who or
right.
New York City, whichever, who can't take the time to educate myself and all I have left to do is to bother my children's friends, you know, and make sure everyone is as ignorant as I am. But, you know, that's all I know how to do is to point my fat finger at at New Orleans and say that evolution is the cause of, and evolution and wickedness is the cause of your pain.
Well, theoretically it is. Because if there was no evolution, we wouldn't be.
No, I'm talking about the teaching and acceptance of evolution.
Ah, you don't mean facts.
No, I don't mean facts. But see, the flying spaghetti monster is a monster created by the dumbasses who want intelligent design.
Touched by his noodly appendage.
Yeah, I love the picture of the flying spaghetti monster. I don't know who created the image, but it's beautiful. It fits right in with the Michelangelo Adam touching God picture. Although I'm wondering where the nubile, young, naked sweeties are that God had around.
All right, well,
under his arm.
This is the end of our show. And learn more about the flying spaghetti monster and believe. Believe.
Believe.
Our website is?
HellboundAlley.com. And the email address is Allie@HellboundAlley.com. Spelled A-double-L-triple-E.
What's about our next shows? Where there's a live show tomorrow on
mm-hmm.
the 4th?
And make sure you check out the live page because it's not going to be on the station.
It's going to be on our very own Shopcast stream. That's 10 times better.
Thanks to our friend Niels.
Yes, Niels rocks.
Now, this station is not our station. It belongs to him, so we're only using it during our show.
Next week, Economics 101. We're going to explain to you what you should already understand about economics.
Well, we need to give equal time.
Very important.
In economics class.
We're not going to give equal times to Marxism.
To Marxism, because, of course, they don't have economics in public school, so they don't have to worry about it.
And then after that, decoding status rhetoric. We're going to have a politics show about understanding all those terms that they use, you know.
Sounds
common
good.
Common good, class. We have to earn. We're going to decode
social contract.
All those terms. Yes, social contract. And remember, you can be an individual and know things and take
and
control
stuff.
Of life. Stuff. All you need is what?
A little reason.
Yeah.
And stuff. See you next week.